Hello and welcome to the Helix Reviews podcast. My name is David Arrington, bringing you reviews from a Christian geek worldview. And today on the show, I'm going to be talking about three different movies: Knives Out, Doctor Sleep, and Terminator Dark Fate. But before I get into those, I want to briefly talk about the first episode of The Mandalorian. I do not have Disney Plus. I watched the first episode from a friend's account, and man, it does a good job at making me want to get Disney Plus. The thing with Disney Plus, I'm probably just going to end up getting it whenever the first Marvel show, you know, is going to come out. I'll get it then, but in the meantime, I'm just going to, you know, go without one until, you know, there's the thing that I'm really excited for on this service. And man, though, watching that first episode is making me really excited for this show. So far, I think that plan, my plan here is going to hold true. But I loved this. This was extremely cool. So this follows a Mandalorian, go figure, which is like the same race or the same people as Boba Fett, but as far as I can tell, as far as I know, this has nothing to do with Boba Fett or anything there. So he's just a bounty hunter that is just, you know, doing his job. He's going out, he's getting his bounties, and then there is this one mysterious person. It's like, oh, this mystery person, who is it? He has a job for you. Go and get this person, you know, alive. Take this person alive. And that's his mission. He goes, the person is not who he was expecting, and you know, like nobody he was expecting, and that's really where the series changes. I don't know if I should say it. It's kind of out there in the wild now. I knew it before I watched the episode because, you know, just social media and stuff, it's all over the place. But I just won't say it for fear of spoilers in case you know, somehow missed that. But there's kind of the turning point in the story where it's really gonna show you who this character is, you know, this character that so far mostly all we've seen is this, you know, kind of hardened bounty hunter that's going out and getting his bounties. People are, you know, begging him for mercy, begging him to stop, and he's just gonna go get the bounty anyway, you know. So he's this very hardened, tough kind of guy, and then suddenly, you know, this situation happens, and we're gonna see what his real character is here. And we've already seen, you know, started to see some of that in the first episode, but really it's a setup for what's going to happen in the rest of this season. And man, I loved it. This was so cool. It's way more serious. It's way more kind of gritty than any of the other Star Wars movies up to this point. Except maybe Rogue One. Rogue One delved a bit more into a little bit darker of a side for Star Wars, and this is definitely closer to that area. It's not like, you know, as different as like the Marvel Netflix shows is to the MCU. It's not that drastically different. It still very much fits within the, you know, kind of Disney Star Wars kind of universe. So it's still got some lighthearted moments. It's still got, you know, some brevity and some fun to it, but it's way more serious than pretty much any Star Wars we're getting at the moment. And just from this first episode so far, it's extremely cool, extremely fun, introducing a lot of different, you know, aliens and things that are cool. This Mandalorian lead character here, you don't even know the name of the character at the end of this first episode, but this character seems really cool so far. You know, we haven't gotten too much into his character. He's never taken off the helmet. This very well could be the kind of thing where he never takes off the helmet throughout the entire series, and that could work if done right. That's something that is a Star Wars trope, having somebody in a helmet like the whole time, like, you know, Darth Vader pretty much in a helmet the whole time, you know, Boba Fett, I guess, and lots of different characters like that. But unlike the Boba Fett in the movies, this one so far has had more character than Boba Fett did. in the movies, because Boba Fett didn't do, like, practically anything in the movies, which is one of the things that makes me go, why does everybody love this character as much as they do? But hey, if it got us this TV show out of it, well, that's pretty cool. Basically, this is an awesome setup for what potentially could be a fantastic series. This has the potential to be my favorite Star Wars thing above the movies and above everything else. This has the potential to be my favorite Star Wars thing if they don't mess it up in the future. So, high praise from me, I'd say. Very, very good. Very cool. I can't wait to watch more whenever Marvel releases one of the Marvel shows on here. Then I'll go back and I'll catch up with the first season of The Mandalorian. Let's talk about Knives Out.
Harlan started out with a Rusty Smith Corona and built himself into one of the best-selling mystery writers of all time.
30 languages, over 80 million copies sold. You guys fans?
I mean, I don't do much fiction reading myself.
I'm a big fan.
Knives Out. When renowned crime novelist Harlan Thrombe is found dead at his estate just after his 85th birthday, the inquisitive and debonair detective Bennett Blanc is mysteriously enlisted to investigate. From Harlan's dysfunctional family to his devoted staff, Blanc sifts through the web of red herrings and self-serving liars to uncover the truth behind his untimely death.
Who is that guy?
Mr. Blanc is a private investigator of great renown.
I read a tweet about a New Yorker article about you. You're famous.
The night of his demise, the family had gathered to celebrate your father's 85th birthday. And your son, Ransom, did he attend as well?
Yes, but he left early.
I think Linda was upset.
Walt would get a little Irish courage in him. He'd get into it with Harlan.
What? Richard said what?
Knives Out is the kind of fun, pretty lighthearted affair where you would watch it and you might not see some of the themes and ideas that pop out in this movie just because of the kind of brevity of this movie, just because the way this movie presents itself. That said, there was a few ideas in here that kind of popped out to me pretty strongly when I was watching the movie, and I definitely noticed while watching the movie. So, watching this movie, unlike what some people believe, there does seem to be a definitive truth in this movie, just in that the stuff that happens actually happened, right? So there is a definitive truth, but there doesn't seem to be a definitive moral truth, because like one wise character says that, hey, you know, there is truth, but what makes you a good or bad person is what you do with the truth. And it's like, okay, yes and no, kinda, but okay. I'll get into this a little bit more in a little bit here. So it seems like in this movie, there are kind of naturally good people and naturally bad people. So one person is told that, you know, they're a good person, you know, they're good because they have a good heart and they need to follow their heart. And whatever they decide will be good because they have a good heart. So this character can make multiple decisions and they'll all be good. I'm being vague here to avoid spoilers. Does this character know that the other character will just make the right decision? Is that what he's saying? I guess there's a slight question right there. I mean, this gets messy very quickly because people do things in this movie out of the, you know, quote unquote goodness of their own heart, but that are very bad things, that are very wrong things. I mean, here's the problem, right? So people are good or bad because of their heart condition, right? You know, if you have a good heart, you're a good person. If you have a bad heart, you're a bad person, right? So that's what this movie's saying. Yes and no. I mean, okay. Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? Luke 6:45. Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. So, I mean, yes, what you do and what you say is who you are at heart. But on the other hand, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Jeremiah 17:9 and Mark 10:18. You know, why do you call me good? Jesus answered, no one is good except God alone. So no one is naturally good because no one is born with a pure heart, right? We're all desperately wicked, like it says in Jeremiah here, right? But on the other hand, we are not without hope. We are not eternally stuck with a black heart. Romans 3, 22 through 24. This righteousness is given through faith in Christ Jesus to all who believe. There is no difference between Jew and Gentile, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Jesus Christ. So, by Christ Jesus. Translation. No one is naturally good. We are all naturally wicked. But through God's grace, we can be cleaned of all this dirt, you know? We can be cleaned of all our sin. And, you know, while still not being perfect, for sure, we can have a righteous heart. We can have that good heart that the movie references through Christ, through the grace of Christ. So what this movie is missing is its view on what makes a person good or bad and what can be done to fix what makes a person good or bad, right? We have a lower moral standard than God does. So we can look at this person and say, oh, that's a good person. And, you know, in the context of the movie, that's, you know, one of the definitely the good character, right? But God has a higher standard than we do for what is good and what is bad. And by God's standard, we are all desperately wicked, but we are not hopelessly so.
Are you baiting me, detective?
Attempting to be thorough so we can figure out the manner of death.
You mean if someone killed him? You think one of us, one of his family,
Walt
killed him?
Mr. Blanc, I just buried my father who committed suicide. Why are you here?
Knives Out is a Clue-style murder mystery that is heavily based on, though I would not actually call a comedy, but has a lot of comedy in it. So let's start with the base of this movie. Let's start with the core of this movie, since this is a murder mystery. Let's talk a little bit, without going into spoiler detail, about the mystery. So, there are a lot of, like, twists and turns and big events and things that happen in this movie. And all of that stuff, I was totally cool with. I really enjoyed the twists and turns. I was, you know, looking for them because this is the kind of movie that's obviously gonna have them, right? And I saw potential in things, and I saw some things, but I never fully got the picture until it's all revealed. That was really well done. That was extremely fun. I do, however, think the overall mystery could have been a little bit more solid. They do some things in this movie that are interesting, that are kind of different for this kind of movie, but at the same time, it weakens the mystery aspect of the movie in some significant ways. And again, I'm being vague. I don't want to do any spoilery kind of things. Now,
David from the future here. I'm coming back to say, listening back to this, I don't think I explained myself very well. So here, I'm just going to try to explain it a little bit further. I think this movie is very clever, and in it being clever, it's trying to kind of twist what this movie is and change what this movie is, and so it goes in some directions that are different than most mystery movies, and so it kind of subverts the genre in some interesting ways, which is cool, which is fun, but in some ways with that, it shoots itself in the foot as far as the actual mystery of the story goes. So I do think the mystery itself could have been stronger, but I think at points in this movie, it ceased trying to be a mystery movie and it was trying to be something else. And I'll say what else it was trying to be was good and well done. But as far as it setting itself up and throughout the entire movie really kind of trying to be a mystery movie, it does something during the course of the movie where, again, it kind of shoots itself in the foot as far as that goes. And if they were going for this, maybe they shouldn't have diverted from the main path of mystery as much as they did. All right, back to the main review.
So I think this movie has a lot of elements of a really good mystery, but it's also missing some very vital elements of a mystery that would just make it a completely solid all-around good mystery story where you're constantly striving for that next step. That said, the thing that really had me enjoy this movie is something completely separate from the mystery itself. What I really loved about this movie is the characters. The characters in this movie are awesome. I love them. They're extremely fun. From Daniel Craig as Bennett Blanc, the main detective character, doing like some kind of like southern kind of accent, which is absolutely not his accent. It's the kind of thing where it took me a little bit to get into it, but then once I got into it, I was cool with it. But it's kind of thing where it's like, okay, that is very clearly not your accent, and you're kind of doing this character to make this accent and all this kind of stuff. But it's like, okay, you know what? It took me a little bit, but then I got into the character, and I really enjoyed Daniel Craig's character. But the whole cast of characters here is absolutely fantastic. From Chris Evans, Jamie Lee Curtis, Michael Shannon, Tony Chalette, just a whole bunch of actors here that are all absolutely fantastic and accomplished actors in their own right, and yet they all mesh together here so well. The characters and the character interactions are so fantastic, so fun and funny, and just thoroughly enjoyable. And for me, that is really what this movie thrived on, is the way all these characters talked and argued and all that kind of stuff that worked so well, that made it so entertaining. They all were very, you know, separate, different, interesting characters that were all trying to kind of come at this from all their different perspectives, but for the most part, you know, they all have the same goal, and it's well, not necessarily true, but it's absolutely fascinating and so much fun. And really, that's pretty much it. There's the mystery and there's the characters. I thought the characters were absolutely fantastic. The mystery had a lot of good parts, but was kind of missing something in the middle that really would have made that shine even more. That said, this is absolutely worth watching. This is fun, it's funny, and it's absolutely entertaining to the very end. And I want more. Do they want to make a whole mystery series with Daniel Craig and all this? I am totally on board for that if they want to do more in this vein. You know, just tighten up a few of the things, you know, make the mystery slightly better there. But other than that, man, I really enjoyed this movie. It was a lot of fun.
I suspect foul play. I have eliminated no suspects.
Harlan was cleaning house.
Everyone in the family has possible motives.
Was Harlan planning on cutting off Joni?
Did he plan to fire Walter?
Is Richard having an affair?
That's some heavy-duty conjecture.
Funny, Ransom, you skipped the funeral, but you're early for the will reading.
Knives Out is rated PG-13. For thematic elements, including brief violence, some strong language and sexual references, and drug material, I would give it a 4 out of 5 stars on the enjoyability scale.
Very nice.
Ransom. Ransom.
You gotta do this more often.
The family is truly desperate. When people get desperate, the knives come out. This is a twisted web. And we are not finished untangling it. Not yet.
The Heel Interviews podcast is a proud member of the Christian Geek Central Network, a hub of all kinds of cool Christian geeky stuff from around the web, all funneled to ChristianGeekCentral.com. Check it out. All right, now let's talk about Dr. Sleep.
When I was a kid, there was a place. A dark place. They closed it down and let it rot. but the things that live there. They come back.
Dr. Sleep. Years after the events of The Shining, a now adult Dan Torrance must protect a young girl with similar powers from a cult known as the True Knot, who prey on children with powers to remain immortal.
Not many ride the bus this far north. You running away from something?
I'm running away from myself, I guess.
Hi. You can hear me. You're magic. Like me.
I don't know about magic. I always called it The Shining.
Before watching Dr. Sleep, I went back and I rewatched The Shining, and man, I really, really enjoyed The Shining. Now, I believe I talked about The Shining in the last 12 things to experience before my next birthday episode. The next episode of that, by the way, should hopefully be the next episode of the podcast. But going back and rewatching this movie, it really sticks out how this is just not your typical haunted house movie. It's completely different in so many ways, and I think really that's kind of what makes it stand out as a classic. One thing I really enjoy about the original is the focus on the music. Man, if the music wasn't as prevalent in The Shining, then this movie would not be as scary as it is. The music is so creepy and eerie. It's like a mixture of music and noises that shouldn't be music but kind of blend into the music that just makes it uncomfortable and unnerving throughout so much of that movie. And watching the movie again, it really stuck out to me. Like, I don't remember noticing this the first time around. It really stuck out to me how much this movie is a story about abuse. Jack, the father in The Shining, is the abusive father. I mean, they hint at it, kind of. I mean, they almost say it outright near the beginning of the movie. You know, you got the story about him coming home drunk, and then he hurts his son, and it's like, oh, but it was just that, you know. But you can tell, like, the dynamic between the husband and wife here, you can tell that it once was abusive, and now he started to move away from that, and he's trying to fix his life, he's trying to righten his life, and then he goes to this house, it starts driving him mad, and he just steps right back into that abusive role, and just, you know, head dives right into all that. And you can tell, like, by his performance about trying to be better, you know, trying to not get angry with his wife or with his kid and stuff like that. Jack Nicholson, absolutely fantastic performance. Shelley Duvall as his wife, Wendy, she does an absolutely fantastic performance, just kind of being loving, but also being cautious around her husband because of who he once was. And you kind of see both sides of that in the movie before even he starts to turn dark again. He starts to become evil again, you know. And, like, the look on her face when Jack blows up on her the first time again in this movie, you know, when she comes into the room he's writing in, and it distracts him, and it makes him mad, and he just yells at her and is just extremely angry, and you can see that look on her face, and Shelley Duvall does such a great job, because you see that look on her face, and you go, oh, that look is not, where is this coming from? That, you know, it's not, oh my goodness, I've never seen this before out of my husband. It's a look of, not this again. You know, and it's a look of terror and everything, but it's a look of terror that she's seen before and is now coming back. And it's like, see, watching it again, it's very clearly that, and it's so well done. It is extremely well done. It's a story about abuse and ultimately a mother and a son kind of getting out of an abusive relationship, I guess. And then Dr. Sleep, we see some more of the effects of what that happened, of what that did to their family, of what that did to Wendy, and what that did to Danny. Because now he's an alcoholic. You know, Danny, grown up, is now an alcoholic, and he's, and really, you know, trying to kind of drown out the memories of old, and also trying to drown out this whole psychic power thing that he's got going on. So this movie has themes about, you know, trying to kind of deal with your past and those kind of things, and also turning your life around from alcohol and from drug abuse, you know, things to kind of dull the pain of life and actually face life head on. Sometimes it's going to be painful, yes, but you need to face it and you need to deal with it in order to live a happy, fulfilling life, ultimately. Now, this one, I mean, the first movie, it dived into, you know, some ghosts and things like that that were very clearly real in the first movie. That's one thing that, you know, sometimes I'll hear somebody say that the ghosts weren't actually real. It's just that he was going crazy and he, you know, and this is just stuff he's seeing or they're seeing or whatever. But the ghosts are very clearly real because, like, they let him out of the freezer. You know, there's a couple instances. Danny sees him and Wendy sees him. And says, I think the ghosts are very clearly real. They're definitely there. And that's something that's further accentuated in the sequel here. But even though there was all that ghost stuff, I never really got quite a sense of their view on the afterlife. I mean, some people obviously passed on, died and weren't there, but, you know, then some people died and were there. But, I mean, okay, so there's some kind of soul, some kind of spirit or something going on. Now, in this one, it's definitely established. We live forever. Like, humans live forever, but just not their physical form. So, like, Stephen King or whoever's in charge of this movie, you know, Mike Flanagan or whomever, when writing this movie, they seem to understand that there is an eternal soul. Like, we have a soul or a spirit that lives on past our bodies. And that seems very clear and just, like, definitive in this movie. But beyond that, it's kind of just a big question mark. You know, when they die and they could become a ghost and haunt people or whatever that. But moving beyond that, we don't know what's beyond that. That's all just a big question mark. And I mean, seemingly in this movie, like, good people seem to go to, you know, the good place or heaven or something, seemingly, maybe. But again, it's very vague and it's ultimately just a big question mark, which I suppose there's a lot of people's views on life after death and stuff. It's like, okay, they can see that there's something spiritual going on. They can see that there's more to people than just the flesh and just the animals, you know. They can see that there's more to people than that, but they don't know what is beyond. They don't know if heaven and hell is real or what is real, you know, reincarnation or whatever, right? They don't know what's life after death. It's all a big question mark. I mean, I guess ultimately that's a decision you're just going to have to make about what you believe. You know, if you decide to read the Bible and believe what the Bible says, then it definitely is an afterlife. Your spirit does live on. Your spirit does live forever. But there's, you know, there's a heaven, there's a hell, there's angels, there's demons, there's all this kind of spiritual stuff that you can see in the Bible kind of laid out. It's like, okay, you know, here is a structure. So if you believe the Bible, there's that. There's hope, and there's something positive that you can look forward to after you die, right? Whereas when it's just a big question mark, I mean, it's scary because you have no idea. Everybody could just go to hell or, you know, whatever, right? So there's very little hope there with that kind of belief. Kind of an agnostic, I suppose, maybe kind of idea where it's just like, you know, potentially there's something positive there, potentially there's something good there, but we don't know, right? But we do know, if we read the Bible and we believe the Bible, that there is a heaven, there is a hell, and there's, you know, a way to get there. There's a way to get to either place. And the way to get to hell is way easier than the way to get to heaven. Okay, let's just talk about this movie now.
The world is a hungry place. But
dangerous place.
These people, they hurt people like us.
These empty devils, they'll eat what shines. And they noticed that little girl.
Well, hi there.
So as I mentioned before, I am a fan of The Shining. I really, really enjoyed that first movie. So when they announced, hey, we're making a sequel to The Shining, I was like, that seems unnecessary. And I don't know that that's a good idea, especially like, what, 30 some years after the original Shining movie released, we're going to make a sequel to that movie now all of a sudden. It's like, I don't know that this is a good idea. And they'd say, oh, but we got Mike Flanagan. And I'm like, oh, okay. The director of Oculus, the director of Hush, the director of all these awesome horror movies. Okay. You know what? I'm suddenly on board to give this a try because I really, really like this director. So here we are, Dr. Sleep. What's it gonna be? Now, if you're expecting more of The Shining out of Dr. Sleep, I mean, don't. Just don't. This movie is radically different in so many ways. But at the same time, there's enough commonalities, there's enough connections that it does work as a sequel to the first movie. But that said, it's pretty much nothing like the first movie. I mean, the biggest difference, I guess, is that this is hardly a horror movie. I mean, I guess it's a horror movie in the same way that, like, a vampire movie or, you know, a zombie movie kind of thing would be a horror movie. Technically a horror movie, but not really that scary. Honestly, this is more of Stephen King's version of the X-Men. And I mean, that's cool, you know? You got these kids that have powers, you have this adult that has to, like, save this one kid that has powers, because these other people that have powers are coming to kill the kid that has powers. You know, it's the X-Men, only it's Stephen King's version, so it's X-Men with a horror lens you're looking through, right? So, I mean, that's super cool, and I really enjoyed it, and they do some, like, superhero-y kind of things in this movie that, again, I wouldn't really have expected out of a sequel to The Shining. That said, I thought it was really cool, and I really enjoyed it, basically, as a unique, interesting version on take on, like, a superhero kind of movie as opposed to a horror movie. Now, I think there definitely will be people that will be more horrified with this movie than other people. You know, I think parents might, this might be a more horrifying movie for parents because the focus of the movie is to kill kids, right? So, you know, you get this kid, she has her parents, and now suddenly, you know, they're at risk of their child dying, you know, this absolutely horrible death. And so, you know, there's that aspect of terror, there's that aspect of horror, but honestly, the way it's done, to me anyway, as someone who is not, you know, does not have any kids, it wasn't extremely scary. It was more just intense, edgy, your seat thriller kind of stuff over horror kind of stuff. And so if that bums you out that that's what the sequel to The Shining is going to be, I mean, maybe you're not going to be a fan of this movie. But if you, like me, like unique takes on superhero movies, check this out, because this is basically a different unique take on a superhero movie, just with the character that was in The Shining. Now, they have a lot of callbacks and even like recreations of things that happened in the first movie to varying degrees of effect. An example of this is that you see, you know, the younger Danny riding around on his bike in the trailer, right? And it's portrayed by a different actor. So, you know, when he turns around and he looks at that door, room 207 or whatever that door is that he's not supposed to go in, right? So, you know, he turns around, he looks at that door, and I go, oh, that's a different actor. That's not the same person who portrayed him there. And they do several different things where it's like, kind of like takes on the older movie or twists on the older movie a little bit. And a lot of these scenes do work. A lot of these are kind of cool, interesting ties to the first movie that I really enjoyed. But there was a couple times where I was like, you shouldn't have done that, because it felt like a cheap imitation of a classic thing, and you didn't get there, you weren't really gonna get there, so you shouldn't have tried, you know? So there was a few things like that in this movie that were like, okay, maybe you shouldn't have gone for trying to be the next classic movie. No, try to be the next classic movie. Don't try to redo what the last classic movie did, right? There we go. Ewan McGregor plays Danny. I thought he was great. I really think he captured some of the elements of the character from the first movie, but the character from the first movie, just being a kid, you know, you have to develop a lot more from there. And I think he was great in this role. And I think the direction they went with his character was very interesting and very cool. It made a lot of sense for the character. And I liked the overall story, the direction that they went with him. You got some other characters in there. One's played by Cliff Curtis, whom you might recognize from a few things. I thought he was good. There's the new kid character here. You know, kid characters can be hard to get right sometimes, I think. But I think they did a pretty good job. Kayla Curran plays Arbor Stone. And she's the kid character that Danny has to protect this time around, because this cult group kind of people are coming after her. And I actually really enjoyed her character, and I think the actress does really good with the material that she had. I think somehow Mike Flanagan can get very young actors to act very well, which is cool. You know, it's something that it seems like we're seeing a little bit more of these days with things like Stranger Things and things, which is super cool. And once again here, I think we got a good young actress playing this character, and I enjoyed the character. I think she was interesting and very believable, and they really made me care about this character and want Danny to be able to protect her and want her to be able to defend herself from all this evil that is going on. The villains, the group of villains, are interesting and creepy and weird, and also they got some interesting layers there. They definitely gave these characters more to do than just be evil, which was interesting. It's some interesting stuff with these characters, though still very definitively evil, right? One thing I didn't really like, the first portion of the movie felt like it was just trying to catch you up with what happened since the first movie. And I mean, it kind of just, it for the first like maybe 20 minutes of the movie or so, it just felt like they were like, oh, let's just try to hurry up and catch you up with every single thing that happened from now to then. And it just felt like the main story wasn't starting. And so it took a little bit for me to get into this movie, because it felt like it was just kind of moving all over the place trying to explain everything. I think maybe they should have done a little bit less explaining of what happened in between, and a little bit more of just moving forward with maybe some references. I think we pretty much would have gotten it with most of the movie that was in front of that, so I don't know that we really needed as much backstory there as ultimately they gave us. But oh well, it's not too big of a deal, because once you get into the movie, then it had me till the very end. So overall, Dr. Sleep, I think some people are going to be very disappointed because this movie is not very scary. It's not the horror movie that the first movie was, and is so completely different. That said, I think it's an interesting story. It takes the story of the first movie into some places that you wouldn't really expect, and some cool, interesting, unique things. And overall, I enjoyed Dr. Sleep.
Get out of my head! Get out!
I haven't felt power like that in so long.
They're coming. Where are we
it going?
There's a place.
Dr. Sleep is rated R for disturbing and violent content, some bloody images, language, nudity, and drug use. I would give it a 4 out of 5 stars on the enjoyability scale.
You sure you want to do this?
I'm ready.
Yes, you run, dear. And then I will find you. And you will scream for years.
The next movie is the, fifth movie in a series that I don't know how these movies keep getting made. Terminator Dark Fate. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love these movies. The Terminator franchise is one of my favorite franchises of all time. I want more. Keep making them. But the last couple have flopped critically, and they, I mean, at the very least, haven't lit up the box office, right? So, I mean, if I was in charge of a studio, I don't think I would put this, my bet on this franchise, you know, because it doesn't seem to be working. But they keep doing it. They keep spending millions, hundreds of millions of dollars on these movies. Maybe that's something they need to do. Maybe they need to make a $40 million Terminator movie. And I mean, that would make money because Terminator is a big enough name to make more than that, you know? So maybe that's the next step for the Terminator franchise. But here we got another one. Terminator Dark Fate.
My name is Sarah Connor. August 29, 1997. It was supposed to be Judgment Day. But I changed the future. Saved 3 billion lives. Enough of a resume for you?
No.
You may have changed the future, but you didn't change our fate.
Terminator Dark Fate. More than two decades have passed since Sarah Connor prevented Judgment Day, changed the future, and rewrote the fate of the human race. Now, another new different kind of Terminator has come back to the past to kill somebody new, Dani Ramos. What does she have to do with the future of the Terminator franchise? Well, you're just gonna have to watch this movie and figure out. Oh yeah, and also, there's this other Terminator-like lady that comes back and is fighting the Terminator that's like on our side maybe, and there's more stuff like that. On to the review.
I know you're scared, but I'm here to protect you.
Never seen one like you before. Almost human.
I am human. Just enhanced.
Thematically, this movie seems actually thematically probably a little bit less than some of the other Terminator movies. I think the Terminator movies have a lot of thematic richness, especially Terminator 2, but especially the first few Terminator movies have a lot of thematic richness, and that has definitely waned off in the past couple probably, but in this one as well, definitely less thematically interesting, thematically rich. I would say there's like, you know, standing up for each other, even in impossible odds. There's the idea of, you know, heroic sacrifice and things like that. Probably the biggest one here would be that everybody needs a purpose. It's like Sarah Connor, after saving the world in Terminator 2, has to find a new purpose. Our time-traveling robotic helper girl here has to, you know, has this purpose. You know, she has to protect this girl, you know? Our heroine gets thrown into this new Terminator battle thing, you know, kind of like Sarah Connor was in the first movie. She is very much the Sarah Connor of the first movie in this movie. And then she discovers that, hey, I have a purpose, you know? And even an old Terminator that doesn't have a mission anymore has to find a purpose in order to keep doing anything, right? So ultimately, you have to have a purpose is kind of the overarching idea of this movie. And so, okay, take that idea. What is our purpose as Christians? I guess the Sunday school answer, Jesus, yeah. And pretty much. I guess our purpose as Christians would be to worship God and to promote the name of Jesus and to further his kingdom in that way, and to, you know, and there's so many ways to do that, you know, whether it be missionary type work, whether it be work in your church, whether it be raising your kids up in the teaching and instruction of the Lord. And ultimately, there you go, living for Christ, there is your purpose in life. God will give you purpose, and God will give you fulfillment when you are doing that purpose. So anyway, there we go, find your purpose. Yes, do find your purpose. So overall, I'm going to say not super thematically rich, not so, I don't know. I didn't find it particularly interesting. I mean, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, okay, there is something there. There's something interesting there. But it was never particularly deep, right? So there we go. Let's move on to the actual review. I always say review, but then as I go into the theme section, now let's go actually to the review section here.
Why do you care what happens to her?
Because I was her.
I can see you're very upset. I'm going to help you protect the girl.
Nobody else is gonna die because of me! If you don't make it, everybody dies!
Expect a big pain, brother. My whole body's a weapon. Sorry.
So, Dark Fate erases the past three movies and is a direct sequel to Judgment Day. So this seems to be kind of a trend in Hollywood these days to eliminate the bad sequels and to just make a sequel directly to the good movie. Now, unlike Halloween, for example, where I was fine with cutting out all that fat in the middle because those were pretty hit or miss, and I mean, more misses than hits, you know? I actually like the Terminator sequels. You know, I mean, sure, none of them live up to the first two, but there's something I like in each of those movies, and I think it's a bummer that we have to throw out the baby with the bathwater, right? You know? Check out my franchise review of Terminator to get all the specifics of what I do and don't like about the Terminator movies and their sequels, but there's stuff in all of those that I like, and I think it's a bummer that we have to do away with all of them in order to proceed with the franchise, but that's what we got here. Okay, let's move forward. Our new hero, Danny, played by Natalia Reyes, is very much the Sarah Connor of this, from the original Terminator movie to this movie. You know, very much that same character. In some ways, this is almost a soft remake of that first movie in some ways. Now, the whole movie really centers around her, but she has, you know, yet to become the person that she's supposed to be and all this kind of stuff. Very much, again, like Sarah Connor was. She's pretty good. I think the actress did a pretty good job. She's a pretty interesting character, but overall, she's nothing exceptional in my mind. She's like, oh, it's pretty good. You know, if the movie's gonna focus on her, okay. I can see them with a sequel taking that next step the same way they did with Sarah Connor into the next movie, making her exponentially more interesting. I could see them going that direction. That could be cool. You know, we'll see. So far, this movie, she's pretty good. Grace, in this movie, played by Mackenzie Davis, is the character that comes back in time to save Danny. She's great. I really thought she did a great job of being this very, you know, driven character that she's got on a mission. And, you know, and so much of that is just trying to, like, oh, I have to push forward. You know, there's kind of a time limit on this. I have to push forward. I have to do this. I have to save her now. Otherwise, she dies. The future's screwed. All this kind of stuff. And she's really good. You know, she's good at having that hard line going straight forward. And then also, you can kind of see some of the breaks in that and see some of the humanity in that, too. She's good. I liked her. Arnold in this movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger, love him. Great. They didn't explain what he was about, so I won't say what he was about. Loved it. Okay, the big news. Sarah Connor is back. Once again, played by Linda Hamilton. And she's awesome. She is great. This is a cool, slightly different version of this character than we've seen in the old than the previous movies. She's a great character, and while she doesn't get as good of moments as she got in the first couple Terminator movies, they do a good job at giving her some humanity mixed in with this angry determination that this character has as well. Sarah Connor is old and grumpy this time around, and that's it's a fun different way for her character that I really enjoyed. Gabriel Luna is the new Terminator, and I mean, yeah, he can play an intimidating robot. If you don't know who he is, he's the guy that played Ghost Rider in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The new Terminator, this time, can be both the liquid metal Terminator and the skeleton Terminator that, you know, when you burn down Arnold and it's just the skeleton, they can be both of those things at the same time, basically making two different Terminators, two of himself, or like one more powerful version of himself. They kind of played around with this idea in Rise of the Machines, but not nearly to this extent. It's really cool. I really like this idea for a Terminator. It's cool. I really like it. The action is fantastic when it comes to the hand-to-hand combat. You know, that slugfest stuff that Terminator does so well. And also, the car chases. There is a great car chase in here, very much in the spirit of the car chases before it in the Terminator movies. Love it. Very good. Now, there is one very large-scale action sequences that really felt choppy and kind of discombobulated, you know? It made it seem like it was kind of shot like it was supposed to be a close-up hand-to-hand action sequence, but it made it hard to follow what was going on in the big picture. If you've seen the trailer, it's the one with the airplane. That's all I'll say. The one with the airplane, I found kind of hard to follow, and overall that just was not a very good action scene, unfortunately. Now, storyline-wise, this is in the vein of Force Awakens-style storytelling. And by that I mean, in the same way that The Force Awakens was just a different version of A New Hope, Dark Fate is a different version of the original Terminator movie in the hopes to continue to something different down the road. You know, very much like the Force Awakens was. And, I mean, at the point where they're at with this franchise, I think that's probably fine. You know, they're really, it seems to me this is probably the last-ditch effort for the Terminator franchise, unless, like I said before, unless they do something very small, you know, to try to reboot the franchise that way. This is kind of a last-ditch effort for this franchise kind of thing, because they keep trying to do it, it keeps not succeeding at least as well as they want it to, and then they keep retrying. So, you know, maybe this is what this franchise needed, so okay. Remember how the humor in Terminator Genesis felt kind of off? The Terminator movies have always been kind of funny. You know, they've always had some good humor in there while still being very, very serious. I mean, some of the sequels kind of screwed around with that a little bit too much, but remember how in Terminator Genisys especially, it just felt kind of weird, some weird kind of humor? Well, the humor this time around definitely is better. It feels a lot more in line with the original trilogy, and I liked it. You know, it's funny at times, but the humor never got in the way of the seriousness of the situation at hand. There's some CGI in here that looks unfinished okay, you know those moments in the trailer that I thought they would touch up before the movie releases? Well, they didn't really touch it up. It still looks about as fake as it did in the trailer. It still looks like CGI, so there's some of those moments in this movie. If that bothers you, it bothered me a little bit at a few points in this movie. Now, a little bit kind of a nitpick here, I guess. The Terminators aren't powerful enough in this movie. No human should be able to take on a Terminator for more than like 1 or 2 seconds at all, and that's if you're like surprise attacking him from behind or something, you know? In this movie, a human pushes a Terminator to the ground from like the front facing him, and it's like I guess maybe this is kind of nitpicky, but you should not be able to do that to a Terminator. The appeal of Terminators as villains, in my mind anyway, is just how crazy unstoppable they are. You know, you take away how unstoppable they are and you risk them becoming cannon fodder, right? And I don't want that out of a Terminator. I want one single Terminator to be so crazy, unstoppable, difficult to beat that you know, that right there could take down your whole, you know, little posse of people or whatever, right? I don't want a human to be able to face a Terminator head on and push it over, you know? Okay, a little bit of nitpickiness maybe, but it's something that happened in the movie and I'm like, no, that's stupid. Don't do that again. Also, there was a cheesy moment where a character had like, oh, inspirational speech time. And then the people reacted like, oh yeah, that was an inspirational speech. And I was just, all right, buddy, don't do that. It was cheesy. So overall, Terminator Dark Fate, it's like the third or fourth best Terminator movie. I mean, I'd say it's about on par with Terminator 3. I really liked Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. Obviously, it's not as good as the first two. Neither is this one as good as the first two. But I'd say it's about on that level. It's about right there. And I enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. It's really cool. It's more Terminator. It's what I want to see out of this franchise. You know, it's edgier seat. It's exciting. Adds some new interesting lore. It took a little bit of lore and changed it in a way that I didn't particularly care for, but ultimately it didn't affect the story too much. But it adds some more interesting, different lore, and I want to see the Terminator franchise continue, and I like these characters, and I like this situation and everything that they happened here with the Terminator, that I want to see a sequel to this movie, though judging, again, by just kind of the lukewarm box office that they got for this movie, I don't foresee that happening, unfortunately. I really think the next step here, other than killing it, I'm pretty sure that's actually going to be the next step, is that they're like, all right, we're not going to make another Terminator movie for 15 years, you know, which is going to suck. But, or maybe it'll go back to TV or something, I don't know. But I really think, all right, now we're making the $40 million Terminator movie, or the $30 million Terminator movie. You know, we're going low budget Terminator, you know, a couple people, one Terminator coming after him, very much like the first movie. The first movie is a pretty low budget movie. The second movie really spikes up that budget tremendously. And, you know, maybe it's time to go back to that first movie. You could even make it a sequel to this movie and just maybe make it go back to that first movie, make some good action, make some good characters, do a really good character-focused movie, get the themes going again, get those juices going again. You know, I want to see more of that, but overall, I really did enjoy this movie. I think, again, it's the third or fourth best Terminator movie. It's good stuff.
When this is all over, I am going to kill you.
I understand.
Terminator Dark Fate is rated R for violence throughout, language, and brief nudity. I would give it a 4 out of 5 stars on the enjoyability scale.
I'll be back.
You know, Terminator Genesis, I believe I gave that a pretty positive review, and I still do enjoy that movie. I think it's pretty good. It just has a lot of flaws. This one definitely had less flaws than that movie, that's for sure. But I still think what they did in that movie, I think there was a lot of potential there, and I think they could have done something even cooler down the line. I think I was probably a little too hot on it when it first came out than what I am now. You know, I've watched it again since, and I've cooled off on it a little bit. I still do enjoy it. I still do, you know, there still is something in every Terminator movie that I like. And again, I think it's kind of a bummer that we have to erase all these things, you know. But that said, this is what we got. I hope the Terminator franchise moves forward. I question whether it's going to. Then again, I questioned whether it was going to after Terminator Genesis, and here we are. I'm happy that we at least got this. I hope we get more. You know, I want more, and they totally could make more. And yeah, let's make some more Terminator sequels here. That is all for this episode of Helix Reviews. On the next episode, it'll probably be the 12 things to experience before my next birthday episode. And, I mean, coming up really soon here. I mean, we got the most anticipated of next year, the best of this year, all that kind of stuff. That stuff is right around the corner. I have a new episode to add to the end of the year that I'm going to try out this year. We'll see how that works. Yeah, I mean, we're coming up onto one of my favorite podcasting times where I talk about the end of the year, next year, all that kind of stuff. I love that stuff. That's all for this time. This is David Arrington of the Helix Reviews Podcast, signing out. Bye-bye, guys.